Welcome to Listen by Jean Ginsberg. This audio experience and podcast is all about social media, digital marketing, entrepreneurship, and interviews with top entrepreneurs in the digital and social space. I'm your host, Jean Ginsberg, digital marketing expert, number one best-selling author, and award-winning entrepreneur. I will be sharing with you strategies, tips, and tactics on how to grow your business and your social media following. Thanks for listening. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode, and we're excited to have a special guest today, Peter Voss. How's it going?
Good, good.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. I've been looking forward to this conversation because one of the things that you mentioned in an email is like, well, what's the next step of AI, right? What goes beyond, you know, large language model? So I would actually love to learn about that. But before we get into that piece, which I'm very excited about, usually I like to ask our guests to kind of provide some background, you know, so that our audiences can get some context into, like, you know, what did you do before? Where are you coming from? And then we can talk about your, you know, what you're doing now. So yeah, maybe a little bit of background about you.
Yes, of course. So I started out as an electronics engineer and started my own electronics company. And then I fell in love with software and my company turned into a software company. So ERP software for small to medium-sized businesses. And that company turned out to be quite successful. We went from the garage to 400 people and did an IPO. So that was super exciting. We'd love to do that again. And it's when I exited that company, it occurred to me that as proud as I was of my software really is dumb. You know, it doesn't have common sense, doesn't really understand. If the programmer doesn't think of something, it'll crash or give you an error message or whatever. So I decided really my mission was to figure out how to make software intelligent. And in order to achieve that, I spent 5 years studying intelligence. All different aspects of intelligence, you know, even starting with philosophy. How do we know anything? You know, epistemology, theory of knowledge. What is reality? You know, stuff like that. Do we have free will? So there are a lot of aspects of really understanding consciousness, intelligence, and so on. How do children learn? What do IQ tests measure? How does our intelligence differ from animals? And of course, I read, you know, hundreds of books and papers on AI and what people had already tried to do. So a combination of that effort, I came up with a design for a thinking machine, basically real AI, and started working on that in 2001. And I've been basically chipping away at the problem, both from development point of view and then also to commercialize technology, really for the last 20 years. And in 2002, I actually got together with a few other people, and we coined the term AGI, Artificial General Intelligence, and wrote a book on that. And that we didn't think the term would kind of catch on as it did, which is nice. And certainly, I can talk about what AGI is and how it differs and all that. But yeah, that's my background. And right now, I'm trying to get to full human level AI, to get to AGI. That is my focus right now, in addition to the commercial company that I run.
Wow, there's so much to unpack there. I mean, first is you're just the pioneer, right? You started doing this 25 years ago, versus all of us, you know, country bumpkins. We're like, oh, this is great. Like, I just learned about ChatGPT like a year ago. So, So you've been at the forefront of this. This is great. I guess the first question would be, yeah, maybe you can kind of talk a little bit of, in case our audiences are not familiar, you know, how, kind of the trajectory, right? So it's like right now we have large language models, but then what exactly is AGI and what do we need to get from where we are now, you know, ChatGPT, which is kind of a simple, you know, it's very simple. I feel like it's kind of like it predicts what I think, you know, what ChatGPT thinks a person would say, but some of that stuff is, you know, a little bit weird and not always very well spoken. So how do we get to that next level? And what is that next level? First define it, and then how do we get there?
Right. Yeah. A good question. I mean, the term AI, artificial intelligence, and AGI and generative is all kind of pretty muddled up and muddy. So when the term AI was coined 69 years ago, it was about building thinking machines, machines that can think, learn, and reason the way humans do. And when they coined the term, they thought they could crack this problem in a year or two, 69 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, of course, it turned out to be much, much, much harder than that. So what happened over the decades, the field of AI really abandoned the idea of building thinking machines. And what the field of AI has really been doing almost up to the present time is what is best described as narrow AI. So you take one particular problem at a time and you try and solve that. So, you know, for example, IBM's Deep Blue, the chess world champion, would be one example of that, and where it's really the programmers that figure out, it's a programmer's intelligence that solves the problem on how to write software that can be good at playing chess. And we've now seen that with speech recognition and so on. So you really try to solve one problem at a time. Now, of course, with large language models, it's really sort of solving many of the language related problems, but it's still focusing on how can we get a conversation? How can we predict the next word, the next sentence accurately? It's not really about how can we get a machine that can actually think and learn and reason right. The way humans do. So, and that is the reason why in 2002, we coined the term AGI, because we wanted to, a few of us, about a dozen people that I came across, said, the time is ripe for us to go back to the original ambition, the original vision of AI, to build thinking machines. And now the approach that we're taking is really to start off by understanding what intelligence requires and to build a machine that can do that. And large language models don't take that approach at all. I mean, large language models are more kind of an accident of history, that you have companies like Google and Amazon and Facebook that have massive amounts of data that they've accumulated, and they have a lot of computing power. So they basically say, we've got a lot of data, we've got a lot of computing power, what useful things can we do with that? So it's sort of, that's a hammer we've gotten, like everything starts looking like a nail. So this is really, you know, what statistical AI and generative AI, machine learning, is all about, is exploiting big data. And this is why we have these massive training systems. ChatGPT cost $100 million to train, which is kind of, you know, pretty crazy. But that's the approach. And really, AGI is to the idea to really have machines that can learn the way a human does, or when a child does, you know, that you learn, you don't need to spend, you know, 4 weeks to kind of learn something new. You know, you can learn it immediately.
Right. So, okay. So we have large language models and AGI. So I guess the next question is, how do we train a machine to have the intelligence of a human so that it's not just predicting the next word, but it's actually right. Thinking more strategically and intelligently versus just like spitting out something.
Right. So I recently published a paper about the approach of what's called cognitive AI. And, you know, that is really to build thinking machines. And how humans, how we learn is, you know, we perceive things, we see things, we hear things, and we conceptualize them. So concept formation is key to it. And how humans are different from animals is that we can form very abstract concepts. So we can form concepts on top of concepts on top of concepts to become increasingly abstract. So we end up with concepts like, you know, honor and government and, you know, and marriage and things like that, that are very abstract concepts. And it's really that concept formation, and it happens in real time. I mean, it happens as we're having a conversation, as you read something. It's not about, you know, reading millions of, or in the case of ChatGPT, it's 10 trillion words to train the system. You know, for us, we might read one paragraph and it tells us a lot because we conceptualize it. We integrate that with other knowledge that we already have. So it's this having a machine that has the ability to learn interactively and to form concepts. And it can then learn like a child. And that is really the approach with cognitive AI. So you're building a machine that can learn much more like a child learns.
And where are we now with that? And where do you think, when is it going to be a prototype, a working prototype, so that we can actually go to bed and be like, okay, tell me about what marriage is, and I will, as a human, can tell
Right.
you, if you're right or not.
Yeah. So we've had, prototypes of this technology really for 20 years, but they haven't been powerful enough to really learn a lot. And, they kind of hit a wall for various reasons. And unfortunately, my company has not had the sort of funding that we could just increase our development team and power through. So what's happened to me over the last 20 years is that once we built something that had a certain degree of utility, we then started commercializing that. So we currently, our current version, we commercialize in the call center space. So for example, one of our customers is 1-800 Flowers, Harry and David, that group of companies. And we replaced call center agents. So, a few weeks ago when we had Valentine's Day, we replaced 3,000 agents, which normally they had to hire 3,000 people just for like 3 days, which is crazy to try and hire that many people and train them up. And so we do that very successfully. But to do that successfully, because our system isn't yet at human level, we had to put a lot of manual guardrails around the system that it can be totally predictable and it can do exactly what the company wants us to do, updating the back-end systems, applying all of the business rules and so on. So our commercial product is sort of a version of an AGI engine that has been contained and constrained to be much more predictable. So on our development side, we are continuing to develop the sort of much more open-ended, but like when a child learns, you really don't want to put them in a call center or into some critical thing. So we need to crank up the intelligence of our AGI to a point where you can really also rely on it without having all of these guardrails around it. And that's what I spend most of my time on now, is to increase the IQ of our system. So when can we expect that kind of personal assistant? Well, the answer I always give to that question is I don't measure it in years, I measure it in dollars.
Okay.
Because we know what we need to do, but right now we don't have the resources to hire the kind of the 100 people that we need to have working on this. So, it's not going to take billions of dollars in my estimate. But it will take, somewhere in the realm of probably $100 million or so to, have a team big enough to upgrade, to scale the system that we have. So I believe we can have human level intelligence, real AGI, within a few weeks. Sorry, not weeks, years.
Okay, I was like, in a few weeks.
Not years, not weeks, not weeks, no,
Maybe if Jeff
weeks.
Bezos invests in your company and gives you $100 million, it could happen in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yes. Hopefully he's listening to this
It
podcast.
takes a little longer to just find the right people and bring
Yeah.
them on board.
So I was curious about when you said that, you had 1-800-Flowers as your client and that they didn't have to train 3,000 people. So what would have been the user experience if I called 1-800-Flowers and I had a question or a customer complained? How would I have interacted with this
Well,
thing?
the simple answer is, out of all the people who used our system, 90%, 9 out of 10 people use the system and stayed in the system. At any time, they can say, I want to talk to an agent. I want to, transfer me to an operator. So 9 out of 10 people, we could help completely efficiently, quickly. And of course, you have to realize when companies have this peak demand, there's always a wait time.
Right.
So with an automated system, zero wait time. So, people want to change their order, or they need to get a refund, or they have, some question about it or whatever. And we manage to handle 90% of the requests very, very efficiently, because we call our system a chatbot with a brain, because it has this AGI engine, this proto AGI engine. And what the brain does is it has short-term memory, long-term memory, reasoning, and can use context. So it knows as soon as it identified the customer, it has the customer's history. If you called yesterday and you wanted to change your order and you're now calling up to find out, you know, is it going to arrive or did the change go through, or, you know, the system will anticipate that because it has that memory. So the user actually has a better experience overall on average than talking to a human, because the system, I mean, when you call into the call center, obviously the person isn't going to remember you. You're
right.
Not talking to the same person. Even if you do, they're not going to remember that you called yesterday out of the other 200 people they spoke to.
Right.
So with an automated system, you really have this concierge type service that is in most cases better than talking to a human. You know, you just get things done. It has all of the relevant information at its fingertips. So it's an excellent user experience.
Right. I really like the way you explained it, because it's just interesting. We always kind of think about, what is the user experience, right? Like when is it a bot? Is it like someone, is it like sounding like a real person, but then it's not really a real person? So it sounds like it's more, as of now, it's more of a machine who is talking to you.
Correct. Of information. Yeah. And, you know, our customers, sometimes new customers, say we want the machine to sound just like a human that you can't tell. And I try my damnedest then to persuade them, no, you have to tell the customer up front, you know, this is a machine you're talking to.
Right.
But you also have to basically help them immediately. They have to see that they're making progress. And then they're actually very happy, because they just want to get stuff done. You know, they don't particularly want to talk to a person and shoot the breeze about the weather or the latest, you know, cricket scores or whatever, you know. So it's really, I mean, and of course the younger generation doesn't even want to talk to somebody. They just want to text, you know. And somebody challenged me the other day at a meeting and said, well, you know, surely boomers want to talk to a person. And I looked at the person, I say, do you prefer to talk to a person? And he said, well, no, not me. Well, you're a boomer, you know, aren't you? So, you know, we've been using smartphones for long enough now that, hey, if I can do it on the phone, I'll do it. It's just there's still this history of people hating automated systems,
right,
for good reason. You know, where, I mean, you just want to press one to get to an operator because you have this dumb tree that you go down, press one for that. Please listen carefully. You know, your business is important to us. Our options may have changed recently. And I mean, you know, that it's just insane. So there are such a lot of systems. Ours is the only one, the chatbot with a brain. All the other chatbots don't have a brain, and they can get very frustrating, you know, and that's when people, that's why these systems have such a bad reputation, because they're just not smart enough, and they're badly implemented in many cases. They're brainless, yeah.
I just had this experience with UPS about a month ago. I was trying to get a package delivered from an old address to the new address. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, first of all, it was the bot, and like the machine was like terrible. And then when I did go to a real person, which took me forever, it was like talking to the IRS. Like, I had different responses from different people when I called in. Like, you know, this person said, you know, you needed an authorization. This person said, you need to have the sender send in an authorization. And so it was just this hodgepodge.
What you really need is a chatbot with a brain. Yeah that can just get it done.
Their system is terrible. So that's another client on your radar.
I'll right do there. That.
So the next questions I have are more about the future. And so one question I have is about the future of work, right? So if we think about the 3,000 people that typically 1-800-Flowers has hired in the past to be customer service reps for Valentine's Day, what happens in the future when we have 3,000 people that used to have a job but now don't have a job? And, you know, I know that it's not like, you know, a zero sum game where like they have a job and they don't have a job. It's like, I'm sure they can do other things, but how does that transition happen?
Yes, it's a good question. I mean, certainly in the call center space, companies are having a horrid time finding people. I believe the average longevity is 6 weeks for a call center operator. Now, obviously not the mean, but a lot of people get training. They say, oh, I need a job. I work in a call center. And after 24 hours or 48 hours, I'm out of here. I can't have people shout at me all day long, you know, and so on. So as far as call centers are concerned, it's really not a job that many people want to do or have a career. But yes, the broader question is, as AI is being implemented, we're seeing this with, you know, ChatGPT and so on, they're more and more, it's more and more demand, more options, more channels, and so on. So there are people required to make these systems work. So in the medium term, there's actually a lot of additional work because they're just additional channels, additional services that are available. Now, in the long run, when we have true AGI, human level AI, you really need to turn this around and say, ask yourself and ask other people, would you like to win the lottery? And how many people would say, no, I don't want to win the lottery. I mean,
I don't want to win the lottery.
You don't want to win the lottery?
No. I want to earn it. I want to work for it. I don't want to win the lottery. I've actually thought about this many, many, many times. I'm probably one of the few people because I'm like, right. I don't want just money. Like, I want to earn it.
Right. But then on the other hand, if you did win the lottery, you could do the things that you'd have the freedom to do, the things that the goals that you really want to achieve that can still be, you know, productive, whatever, improving, you know, humanity. But, you know, what AGI will bring is radical abundance, ultimately, that we, you know, people will not have to work. And, you know, that is sort of a logical outcome because the cost of goods and service by automating things will drop dramatically, and, you know, work will become optional, and that's, you know, and it'll open up the possibility for us to do the kind of things that we want to do in the world to help uplift the rest of the world. Let me sketch sort of three different scenarios of what I see the future with AGI will be. The one area is in research. Imagine having one AI that's been trained up to be a PhD level cancer researcher, you know, it trained itself up to do that because AGIs can train themselves to a large extent the way a human can. You now make 1 million copies of that AGI. You now have 1 million PhD level cancer researchers chipping away at the problem.
Right.
Now, we're obviously going to make much quicker progress than we are now. They also communicate with each other much better than humans do. They don't have egos get in the way. They can share information much, much easier. They're much better at logical thinking. You know, humans are not really that good at logical thinking. It's like an evolutionary afterthought. So,
and forgetting things, probably. I forgot I did this experiment 3 years ago.
Yeah, photographic memory and access to all the information in the world. So all these advantages. Now, you take those advantages in every scientific endeavor, you know, whether it's building better batteries, you know, energy, or whether it's pollution or climate, or, you know, whatever it might be, any other disease. And we're going to make tremendous progress help human flourishing basically by solving the many problems that are really hard for humans to solve. So that's kind of the one realm. The second realm we already spoken about is dramatically reducing the cost of goods and services through automation. And the third area I'm particularly fond of is what we call a personal assistant.
Okay, what's that?
So three different meanings of the word personal. Imagine you have this personal assistant that you own, and it serves your agenda, not some mega corporation's agenda. So that's the first personal, the ownership. The second personal, of course, it knows, it learns all about you, you know, about your dreams, your preferences, you know, your goals, your history, your friends, and so on, and could do stuff for you. And the third personal is the issue of privacy, where you decide what it shares with whom.
Right.
So imagine everybody in the world having access to a personal assistant. You know, it's in addition to just doing a lot of the kind of work that you hate, like, you know, dealing with UPS or whatever, it'll also really be like an advisor. You know, it'll be like a little angel on your shoulder that can,
or the devil,
help you. Angel.
Just kidding.
That can help you think things through, you know.
Or
I guess you
could
ask
decisions.
Yeah, I guess you could ask it as how can I be really nasty, you know, and say that's not going to serve you well. It's going to say, you know, it's really not going to serve you too well too. So you know, I see AGI once it gets to human level, really being a tremendous help for human flourishing across the board.
That also leads me to my last question is, okay, so let's say we don't have jobs or we don't need jobs. So what does purpose look like for, since a lot of us now are entangled with purpose and mm-hmm. and our jobs, what do you think that would look like in the future?
Well, of course, you know, humans will have a lot more time to spend, you know, raising kids, having and helping the rest of the world. I mean, there's so much that needs to be done. You know, I lived in Africa for many years, and the amount of work that needs to be done, you know, to educate and uplift people, you know, to give this to create the same kind of wealth without destroying the environment. There's tremendous amount of work, you know, pretty much everywhere in the world. So, you know, so whether your concern is with, you know, your family and kids or the local society or particular interest groups to really further them and to help people flourish. And part of that will certainly be to tear people away from their identity being a 9-to-5 job.
And not necessarily just a 9-to-5 job, but like purpose in like, this is what my, you know, my, I mean, I'm really tied to my business and I'm sure you are too, right?
It's kind yes,
of,
I am, yeah.
Part of your identity, right?
Right.
And so it's like you, and part of it is just like, you know, creating and problem solving, right? And it's like, I like doing that kind of stuff. So it's almost like,
right. And that will take that to, yeah, we'll take that to sort of a different level. You know, there are so many problems to be solved and to decide, you know, what problems have priority or what really interests us. So yes, it will change. It'll change. And I think this is again where I think this personal assistant will really be important, because we will need the sort of psychological help to help us deal with this radical change.
So they're just going to become like our therapists, basically.
Well, that as well, yeah. It's, you know, it is. I mean, like you say, you don't want to win the lottery because you want to earn money. And I mean, we've also seen that a lot of people who do win the lottery aren't particularly happy. They don't know how to cope with it. So I think having that support infrastructure, and probably a lot of people will be involved with that who become good at helping people manage that transition, that radical abundance, you know, sort of be careful what you wish for.
Right. Well, that was a very insightful conversation. And is this going to be all happening in our lifetime, like the next 10 to 20 years?
Well, as I say, if, you know, if enough money flows into cognitive AI, and obviously I hope to our company, you know, we are talking to a number of investors, and we're actually very active right now in accelerating our project to get to human level. But even there are very, very few people in the world actually working on cognitive AI. And that's, again, an accident of history, because big data statistical systems have been so successful in so many areas. All the money and all the energy has been flowing into that. But people are also realizing what the limitations are. You know, right at the beginning, you pointed out some of the limitations on generative AI. And those are inherent. They can really not be overcome. I mean, that would be a whole nother discussion. So, you know, as soon as money starts flowing into cognitive AI and more people start working on it, I firmly believe we will get to human level AI, AGI, real AGI, within a few years, mm-hmm. much less than 10 years.
Something to consider. Yeah, things could be radically different when we talk again in 5 years or 10 years, and the world would be a different place.
Or well, at least have your personal assistant talk to my personal assistant.
So we can set up a time for a podcast recording. Absolutely, yeah. I'll have my people talk to your people. Well, this was really great. I really appreciate your time. Very insightful. Last question is, how can our audiences get in touch with you or your company?
Very easy. peter@igo.ai. Also, I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter. It's very easy to find me. And I'm building an active community of people interested in promoting AGI to make it happen, not just through what our company is doing, but anybody interested in talking through, you know, obviously not just the positive things that I've spoken about, but also potentially how to manage, you know, manage the potential limitations and downsides of that. So I welcome anybody who's interested in that to contact me. And of course, also any companies that are looking for a chatbot with a brain to provide really top service, automated service, you know, please contact me.
Yeah, I hope UPS contacts you.
we'll try again to get hold of them. But these big companies are normally the people who caused the problem, who created the system that is so frustrating, are the people who are in charge of deciding whether it should be replaced.
Right. Well, thank you, Peter Voss from IGO. Thank you so much for being here. This was really insightful.
Yes, thank you.